Hello there, my name is Aaron Moss, and this is the Starman Manhunter Adventure Hour, presented by Head Speaks. This is an hour-long podcast where we'll talk about the Will Payton Starman comic and the Mark Shaw Manhunter comic from the late 80s, early 90s. We'll talk about every appearance of these two great characters. If you've never read them or haven't read them in a while, this may be a good time to explore these issues. Now, let's get started with our first comic.
First of all, let me welcome you back to our second episode of the Starman Manhunter Adventure Hour. Technically, it's our third episode because I did that zero episode, but it's my second episode. Hope you guys enjoyed the first episode. And seeing how you're back, I'm assuming you did. Not a lot of preamble this time. In case this is your first episode, I'm reviewing the Starman starring Will Payton series from the late 80s, early 90s. And the Manhunter comic starring Mark Shaw from the same time period. I don't think these two characters got enough love, enough credit. So I'm going to review each and every issue they were in and the crossover issues they appeared in. And we're going to go from there and see what happens. So if you guys enjoy this, please write in, let me know. You can email me at SMAH. That's the initials for Star Man Adventure Hour at headspeaks.com. Let me know what you think. Or you can go over to Facebook and check us out there. Do a search for Star Man Manhunter Adventure Hour, and you'll find us on Facebook. Let us know what you think. And also, if you want to comment on the Twitters, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, the Twitters, just Twitter, I don't know. You can look for my primary feed, which is the Headcast Network, and make your comments there for any of my shows. But enough talking about that. Let's get on with our first episode, or first issue we're looking at today. We're going to be looking at Starman number 2. The story was entitled Field Testing. It was cover dated November of 1988, but the on sale date was July the 26th of 1988. That was about a month after I graduated high school. Again, the cover price on this was $1. Writer was the extraordinary Roger Stern. Penciler, the fantastic Tom Lyle. Inker, Robert Smith. Letterer, Robert Pena. Colorist, Juliana Ferreter. Editor, Robert Greenberger. And the cover credits was, again, Tom Lyle and Robert Smith. And the synopsis for this issue, after revisiting the scene of where he got his powers and finding the local sheriff doing his own investigation, Will joins his sister, where they experiment to find out the extent of Will's powers. Wondering what he should do with his life and powers, he notices an article in the newspaper about a serial killer. Wanting to help out, Starman introduces himself to the local police, where he hears a report over their radio on the whereabouts of the killer, who happens to be headed to Mexico. Starman stops the serial killer and rescues his hostage, aka next victim, and in the process, he earns the praise of the media. Meanwhile, the cops seem divided over him. Some enjoy his help, some think he's just a glory-seeking glory hound doing their job. Meanwhile, we find Dr. Melrose checking up on his patients, where one of his assistants suggests that they hire someone to bring Starman in so they can experiment on him. At the end of the issue, we meet that someone, Bolt. To be continued. Again, not a lot happening in this issue, or so it seems, but again, even though it's not a long synopsis, it's a good issue. I guess I'm giving things away by telling you that already, but again, that's why I'm doing this series, because Most of them were good issues. Let's go ahead and start taking a look at the issue. We're going to start with the cover. And since I've already told you what the issue's about, I can spoil the cover for you and tell you what's going on here. So we got the Starman logo, the title of the issue, Field Testing by Stern and Lionel Smith along the top. And we get, an Arizona mountain scene. We get Starman flying along. And below him, we see a car with the serial killer in it. And he's got some sort of look like maybe an Uzi or something, a submachine gun of some sort, firing bullets at him. Bullets are bouncing off of him like Superman. In the passenger seat is this girl. We see she's tied up with either rope or chain or something, and she's got a gag on her mouth. She's leaning out the window looking. Again, this is I like this cover. Again, it's almost something out of the comic. I remember when they used to do that, most of the covers would be scenes from the comic or something representing the comic. Whereas now, a lot of days, it's just... I got really bad in the late 90s, early 2000s. They were just nice-looking covers, but it didn't have anything to do with the actual issue. But I'm digressing. We're talking about Starman, which is a great comic. So we got this guy going down the road, leaning out the car, shooting a Starman. In fact, if the guy was shooting 2 inches lower, it'd be hitting him in the groin. But no, it's a very nice cover. We see Starman flying along. We see the... Okay, let's go ahead and do some... Not necessarily bad, but... Some things about the cover that's not so fantastic, maybe. Starman, when he uses powers and uses a Starman, a lot of times he has, bursts of light raiding out of his eyes, if you will. On this cover, maybe it's just me because I'm getting blind. But I think that's what the... There's a little burst, but they're by his shoulder. I think they're supposed to be coming out of his eyes, I believe, but it looks like it's coming off of his back, off his shoulder blades or something. I'm not quite sure about that. Again, it does detract from the tower cover, but we do see, I think they're supposed to be, because usually these similar type of bursts of energy, if you will, it looks like, is normally coming from his eyes, but this looks like it's coming from his shoulder blades. Particularly, it looks like maybe it's just his left shoulder blade. That's a little wonky. And it's a nice cover. I was looking at this guy driving, leaning out the window, and at first I wasn't quite sure. Yeah, no, it looks fine. His hair is whipping in the wind because, driving down the road, we see the dust cloud behind his car. We see Starman's energy rating off the back of him. He's flying along. Other than the problem with the glowing burst out of the back of his shoulder blades, it is a very nice cover. I'm enjoying it. And again, it represents what's going to be happening in the comics, something you don't see as much nowadays. But again, that's another story for another show, I believe. But anyways, let's go ahead and move on to the comic itself. And on the first page, I'm going to start with that. We see Starman flying above the scene where we see cops. We see a helicopter near a lake. We see a cop or something looking out the lake. People investigating the woods. Most of the people on the ground are not in detailed. It's just outlines almost. Because we've got Starman way above the trees looking down. So that's why you're not going to see much detail on the people because they're too far away. I'm enjoying this cover. Or this first page. Not quite poster ready, but it's close. And Starman's flying kind of backwards, looking back at the scene. It's a very nice dramatic pose. And you know what? I don't care. A lot of people don't care for this costume. I like this yellow and purple. I think it's purple and the white star on the chest. I really like this costume. Later on, just some spoilers for halfway down the road or so, he's going to end up changing his costume at some points. And mainly the color scheme more than anything, if I remember right. I really like this original version of his costume. The purple and the red, or the yellow with the big star on the chest. To me, as I've said on this on my Facebook posts and elsewhere, I think superheroes should be, for the most part, full of hope, full of the four color. That's what we want. We want to see the four color superhero. That's what we paid, at the time, $1 a month for these comics. And now they're $3 or $4 a month. But again, that's another complaint for another podcast. Let's go ahead and move on. Again, the next couple pages isn't much story-wise. It's basically Starman thinking back, and we're getting a little bit between the cops on the ground talking about how they found the body. It was real heavy. He jumped out the window and they thought he was dead. And how Starman's thinking about how he wishes he could stop and explain to him. He doesn't know himself. He fell asleep under the stars, woke a month later in the morgue. He's here. He had powers, and his sister suggested maybe was part of any of the experiments. That's called kind of recap from last issue. Which, again, since this is the second issue, I don't mind. If you were to keep doing that, that would get boring and tiresome. But again, the second issue, it's not bad. The only problem with that kind of storytelling, and again, there wasn't so much a thing back at this time, but if you collect it in a trade, that page, page and a half, whatever it is, can get kind of monotonous, kind of, well, I just read this a few seconds ago. Other than that, like I said, it's not bad. And as Starman realizes that he's late to meet his sister, Jane, as he flies off, we see at the bottom of this page 3, someone's taking his picture. We see this guy, glasses, a ball cap, doesn't look suspicious at all. He's got a mustache. I don't know. I mean, I don't want to talk bad about people with mustaches. I got a goatee myself, so. But he looks suspicious. The ball cap, the glasses, the mustache. And his thoughts is, oh yeah, Dr. Melrose will most definitely want to see this. So we know from last issue, Dr. Melrose is the scientist that was experimenting with some guys, and he doesn't come across as the most savory of doctors. So, and this guy's working for him, so doesn't say much about him. Then we catch up with Will Payton, Starman, where he meets his sister. She's sitting on the top of her Jeep. She's got a cowboy hat on, shorts, boots, a tank top. And my buddy Shag's not on the show, but the redeemable Shag from Firestorm Fan. But if he was here, I'm sure he would say, she is hot. Even though she's a drawn character, yes, Jane, his sister, is quite the attractive young lady. I would go in further detail about how I like to, you know, but that's another story entirely. But yeah, she's hot. Let's move on from her. The only problem I have with Jane, for the most part, is she's got kind of like a punk rock haircut usually. Her hair's kind of spiky a little bit, but that's just not my style. But anyways, moving on from her, we see Starman come flying by, and he doesn't realize how fast he's going, and he causes like a little sonic boom over him. And, you know, he comes landing, the dog's barking at him, and he's like, what's wrong? What's happening to the dog? And Jane's, you don't know? You were supersonic when you flew by. My ears are still ringing. How can you breathe when you're going that fast? And they get talking, and they're decided to test out his powers. Will Payton mentions that he doesn't realize he doesn't need to breathe. He's holding up a large boulder, and she's saying it's been 20 minutes, and he's not tired, just getting bored holding it. They test out his powers, he tests out his heat, and he burns up another cigarro bush like he did last episode. And we find out, Jane mentions a lot of the stuff that we can see from the comic, but she also tells us that it's weird how the heat doesn't affect what he's wearing, so anything close to him doesn't burn up. Otherwise, as he says, it'd be hard to buy outfits if it did. She pulls out a stethoscope to check his heartbeat, and she can't find one. And Will's not really surprised by that. He says he didn't realize how much he changed, but he doesn't really seem too surprised that, you know, most people, if you told me they didn't have a heartbeat, they kind of freak out, like, what? Will's like, eh, I didn't know much I changed, but I don't have to worry about high blood pressure, which is kind of a funny moment at this point. So they finish up testing, and they decide to go back into town. And again, like I was talking about, her haircut's kind of a punk rock haircut. It makes sense, because if you look at her license plate on the page 6, it's Sting. I'm assuming that's the singer-musician Sting. So apparently that's why she's got her haircut like that, because she's that type of music, and she's that type of girl. Still hot, But as they're going back to town, Will mentions he hasn't gone to the bathroom in at least a week. And his sister makes a comment, you know, you need more bran in your diet. And he's like, that's not what I mean. I don't even feel the slightest need to. And again, it's kind of a metatextual comment here, but Jane's like, well, don't worry about it, William. Who ever heard of a superhero going to the bathroom anyway? Which is kind of, I think Roger Stern poking fun at the whole, I mean, you hardly ever see superheroes go into the bathroom or having to go to the bathroom or anything in comics. For one, it's boring. For another, who wants to see a superhero sitting on the john? But it's something that hardly ever comes up in comics. I think it's kind of Roger's comment towards that, which is kind of a funny comment, and it's true. I mean, much like in movies, you don't really, unless it's crucial to the plot, you don't really see a whole lot of people going to the bathroom. So we then cut to a Western Utah laboratory compound where Dr. Melrose is testing his subjects. A couple of them woke up, a couple were in radiation therapy. And we see like two guys floating in, it looks like Bacta tanks from Star Wars. Some sort of water tank. Melrose tells them it's an enzyme bath to strengthen their body to withstand the stresses of any awakening powers. And then we see below that, we see a girl and a guy in coveralls. The girl's bending a steel bar and the guy's floating in the air. Just a little comment here on this previous panel about the enzyme bath. So apparently during the testing, you know, maybe it's because they have full power. Or they both have full powers. He has to give an enzyme bath to help their body withstand. And I don't know if he has to do that or if it's something he's experimenting with and trying out. But Will didn't need that. So I don't know if Will's just a stronger body type for it or what's going on there. But and again, he's doing experiments. So he's actually trying to give these guys powers. And he's going about it what he thinks is the right way. Whereas Will was struck by a stray beam. We're assuming because the satellite being blown up the first issue. So maybe it's just because the accident that Will got, he doesn't matter as much to him. Or maybe they don't need the Zemzine bath and Dr. Melrose doesn't realize it. Just something to think about. And again, we get a little more of Dr. Melrose's, I don't want to say bigotry or racism or anything, but it's his hatred for superhumans. So these guys he's been experimenting on, some have powers, and he's like, for too long, a motley crew of freaks, aliens, and weirdos have been hailed as superheroes. But their day is passing. We're going to show the nation and the world what true heroes can be. You are the first of a new breed of hero. 5 years of experimentation have led to your empowerment. Now you must work and strive to develop those powers to the utmost. You must! And he's starting to rant and rave. One of his assistants named Max says that a field agent just sent a photo in from Colorado where Starman was snooping around the site. And I'm going to again quote from the comic here. What's more, from the readings our agents taken, I'm certain that our power beam struck the area after the Stellaron 5 satellite was knocked off course and destroyed. And again, we get a little editor's note to see last issue. I missed those. But Dr. Melrose is theorizing that whoever Starman is was hit by the beam and received the energy meant for the team. And one of the guys, his name's Stan, that's on the team, he's like, that geek got the powers we were supposed to be waiting for. Let's hunt him down and beat him out of him. Like, that was going to work. But it shows that these guys that he has, I don't think they're very stable mentally. This guy's really, you know, because someone else received part of the powers they were supposed to get, he wants to go beat him up. I don't know. To me, it shows that, you know, maybe he's not, doesn't have the best test subjects available, but. And here, Melrose saying that he wants nothing more than get Starman on his lab table experiment. And as he has to wait, but one of his assistants says, not necessarily. We might be able to use some freelance talent to capture him. So as Alan, that's the assistant guy, goes to tell Melrose his plan about getting some freelance talent, we cut back over to Will. And again, he's getting a letter saying that at this point, the last place to apply doesn't have any job openings. And we get a little more backstory, if you will. He's telling us that, you know, 6 weeks before he had enough work to last for 3 years. But since he was gone for a month, no one wants to deal with him. And so he's thinking about trying to think how he can use his powers to earn money. Since no one's wanting to help. No one's wanting to hire Will Payton at this point. He thinks he'd be a construction worker, could be on a football team. But then he thinks the reality of it, and, you know, how can he make money under another identity? If he's out working as Starman, and you can't, as Spider-Man found out 40 years before this or whatever it was, you can't cash a check under a superhero name. You have to have a real name to cash a check to get paid. And if he did that, he wouldn't have any, he wouldn't have a secret identity. He wouldn't have a private life. And that's what the whole secret identity for is, to give these people a private life. Because again, as we see, and even with celebrities nowadays, you got TMZ, you got all these reporters and all these idiots taking people's pictures. Like with Princess Diana from several years back, they were chasing around taking her picture, causing her to crash and die. All these sleazoid tabloid reporters not wanting to give people a break, having privacy. So if you're, I can imagine a superhero that's a known superhero, not a break in the world. So I can understand. Again, I've commented before elsewhere, I'm a big proponent of secret identities. A lot of people are saying, well, you don't need a secret identity nowadays. I think that's totally wrong. I think secret identities are still a very needed thing for superheroes. That's my own opinion on it, but I think secret identities can work and should work, and are, again, for the most part, most heroes should have a secret identity, because that's just, not only is it the nature of the game, the nature of the comic books, but as Will says, without a secret identity, you don't get much of a private life. So as he's reading the papers, trying to figure out what else he can do, he sees an article about a killer still stopped by the police. And he thinks about how, you know, if I had my powers, I could easily capture someone like this. He's like, wait a minute. Why don't I go talk to the police? There's also an article in here about the authorities seeking Starman to talk about the rescue he made the previous day. That determines making his mind to go see the police. And the next scene on page 10 here, we see Starman hanging out with a bunch of the police officers. One of the police women is like, how do you do that? How do you produce the light and heat? Are there any more like you? And Will's standing there. He's lighting up his hands, showing him his powers. And to answer a question, he's like, as far as how does he produce light and heat, he's like, that's a trade secret, I'm afraid. In other words, he doesn't know how he does it. But again, you don't want to, if you want to impress the cop, if you want to, you know, be impressive, you don't want to log in there and say, here's my powers. Oh, I don't know how I did it. Don't know how I got them. So he's, you know, again, as superheroes tend to do, he's making a little quip. That's a trade secret. I like that. It's funny. And when she asks him if there's any more like him, he's like, well, as far as I know, I'm one of a kind. Because he doesn't know about Dr. Melrose and his little experiments going on. So he'll soon learn that he's not one of a kind, actually. But that's another story entirely. Again, the background on this, like, one of the cops is sitting there just like slack-jawed, like, what the heck? I really like the artwork on this page. Again, I like the artwork of the entire book. Everything's very good. Their faces, it tells you what's going on. This one female cop that's asking him questions, she's inquisitive. There's a couple of cops, other cops around him that's, you know, surprised or kind of like, what the heck? So again, good artwork. And then we get the captain, Estevez. And Starman said he's here, you know, he wants to find out what they want. And he's like, as if I didn't have enough of my mind, every elected official in the state wants information about you. Who in the blazes are you? Where are you from? What do you want? And Will's like, well, all right, Captain, I already told you. I'm Starman. I'm from no place in particular. And, well, what does anyone want? And the Captain's like, look, I have no time for philosophical discussions. You did a good job saving that man. I just want to know what you can do. And Starman's like, well, I can't help you. I can help you if you let me, Captain. I just want to see that justice is done. Like this, he wants to see that justice is done. And one of the cops standing here, he's like, oh great, he wants to be the Lone Ranger. And another cop pokes his head in the scene. What's wrong with that? I grew up watching Lone Ranger. He's why I joined the patrol. And they're starting kind of bickering among themselves for a little bit, and the captain's like, enough. And Starman's like, you know, tell him, hey, you got a captain, mass murder, I can help you. So he starts going bright, and he's telling him that he can go undercover. So this way he just turns really bright. And the next page is a lot darker shade. He almost looks like African-American at this point. And so he's telling him, you know, go undercover, go on stakeouts. And he wants to really help. And as the captain's telling him, you know, it's a police business, not all action and glory. Will's trying to assure him that he wants none of the glory. He just wants to do his parts. There's a call over radio saying that they see the suspect headed out of Yuma, headed towards Mexico. So as the cops rush off again, Starman pulls what I call a Batman here. The captain turns around. He's like, as for you, I don't want Starman. Where'd he go? So again, another, you know, turn your back, and the hero disappears. Again, I call that the Batman move, because that's Batman's famous thing with Gordon. Again, not much really said. I mean, it's got very good artwork in this, on these pages. The storyline, the dialogue is fantastic, I think, in my opinion. So Starman flies off. The next thing we find, we see a patrol car wrecked. This on the bottom of page 14. See a patrol car wrecked. One cop sitting there with a radio. Another cop laying there, his leg bandaged, laying on the ground. Starman lands to find out what's going on. And apparently these cops haven't heard of Starman yet. And so he's sitting there talking. The cop that's laying on the ground that's injured is a black guy. And right now, as I said a few minutes ago, Starman's darkened his skin to look almost African American. And he didn't change back. So he lands on the ground and they're like, who are you? And he's like, it's okay. I'm called Starman. I'm here to help. And the guy lay on the ground. The black guy's like, Starman? You're a brother. And I'm like, this is very true also. Starman's like, brother? You can say I'm everyone's brother. And so the black cop's like, nail that. Beep, 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 brother. And again, while the black guy's meaning brother is in another black guy, Starman's, you know, he's thinking very globally, very globally conscious, I guess you could say, where, you know, we're all related one way or another. We're all, you know, all brothers. We're all working together on this world trying to survive. So, again, I like Starman. That's one reason I like Starman and why I like his comic. He's a very, I don't want to say naive. He's a very optimistic. He's a very caring hero. It's Starman, yeah. I mean, I really enjoy him, and I think, you know, he's got a good outlook on life. So, again, so he flies off to find the bad guy, which we catch up with the bad guy going down his road in his truck. I'm going to stop the minute here to comment back on the cover. I was saying the cover shows what's happening in the comic. It's not quite as close as I thought it was, I was thinking. It's representation. I mean, nothing about the cover is accurate for the most... Well, there's one thing accurate, but... Again, instead of a car like it shows the cover, he's like in a 4x4, like a Jeep, or not necessarily a Jeep, but like a 4x4 truck or something. The kidnapper himself, on the cover, he's got black hair. Here, it's more of a brown. His victim, while she is tied up and gagged, here she's a brunette, where on the cover she was a blonde. About the only thing that's really accurate is it looks like he does have a machine gun. Well, that and Star, he's not driving down the road shooting at Starman. He stopped, he's kicked the girl out of his car, and he's about ready to shoot her. Because he's like, about ready, he's headed to Mexico. He kicks her out, and he's about ready to shoot her, and also we hear, and again, this guy's very jokerific, if you will. He's got kind of a smile, this is page 15 at the bottom. He's got kind of a joker smile a little bit, and the last panel here on this page, the girl's looking away because she's about to get shot, and we hear, ha 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 ha. Very much what you'd expect from the Joker in a Batman comic. And again, I got no problem with that. I mean, the Joker doesn't have a trademark. I'm sure he's tried, but you can't really trademark laughing, I don't think. So, but this is a very, very Jokerific laugh here, in my opinion. Again, it's not a bad thing. It's just a thing. And then we hear someone saying no, and she looks up, and we see Starman holding the truck... up in the air, dumping the bad guy out, and like the guys, the serial killer pushed her out, and he's like, hey, nothing personal. You see, I don't much like people, except to shoot them. Just happens that today, you're it. Bad luck for you. He starts his Joker laugh, and then we see Will Payne say, "No, bad luck for you," as he's picking the truck up and just dumping the guy out. Again, another great scene. This is almost a post-terrific page here. Take off the little inset, the gal with her head turned. Him saying no, but the rest of it could be a nice poster. We got him picking the truck up sideways, the guy falling out of it, his hair flying in the wind because he's falling. The car still got smoke coming out of the tailpipe because he hadn't stopped the car. He hadn't turned the car off, still running. You can see the motor, the radiator fan. Again, it's a very nice picture. I could see this as a poster. And then Will throws the truck aside saying, "You're not killing anyone ever again." And here's the guy who pulls his gun out and starts trying to shoot at Will. It bounces off, much as I said earlier, kind of like a Superman thing. Like, the guy's like, "Can't be. I got him point blank. Just can't be." And while I like that, in the real world, yes, you'd be surprised. I don't know if people would be quite so surprised. Again, this is my one complaint for the issue. I don't know if people would be quite so surprised in a world full of Superman and Martian Manhunters to have a guy in a costume that just flew, picked your truck up and dumped you out, tossed the truck, and when you shoot him and he's bulletproof, I don't know if, you know, that'd be quite so surprising. I mean, the guy's in a costume, so obviously he's some sort of superhero. I think this is after the crisis, so I think the world's been supposedly in existence of superheroes for about 5 years, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe it wasn't quite that long. I'm sure I remember that it's been a while since I've actually looked at the timelines in this era. And then they've changed. It's a sliding time scale, so it's changed. But again, it's been at least a couple years, so I'm surprised that this guy's so surprised that, you know, he couldn't shoot the guy point blank range. In fact, the girls even sound surprised. She's like, he shot you. And again, a world full of Supermen. But I guess it hasn't been that long, because let me see, this was Man of Steel came out in 86, and that was one of the first heroes of the world. So it's probably only been a couple of years. So it may explain, I mean, I don't know, I know comics have been around for 50, 60 years at this point, but it may be only a year or two since superheroes are coming out, and they're not quite as prevalent as I was thinking they are. Because, again, I'm reading this from 2016, so it's, I don't know. But anyway, so he runs off, and he's like, "He must have worn a Kevlar vest. But how do you lift the damn Chevy? And how do you fly and land next to it?" But that's another story entirely, I guess. Maybe he didn't see that, because he was too busy trying to shoot the woman, because he's all of a sudden, he's like, "You can't be flying, you can't be. What kind of monster are you?" Will's like, "Monster? You're calling me a monster? You killed a dozen innocent people. People you didn't even know. You're the monster." And he's like, "Yeah, well, this monster's got most of full clipped aim right at your pretty face." Because, again, he's thinking that Will's wearing a Kevlar vest, and that's why the bullets bounced off. Little does he know that Will's pretty much invulnerable at this point. But he doesn't get a chance to shoot Will, because Starman lights up his powers. The gun gets hot and starts melting, and the guy throws away as it explodes. Again, as I said before and elsewhere, I'm not much of a gun guy, so I don't know if you got the gun hot enough, it would explode like that. But it makes a nice visual. The guy rolls over and throws the gun away, and it just explodes. If any of my listeners out there are gun people, let me know if this page is page 19 is very accurate. If you got a gun hot enough, if it would explode like that. I'm curious. And anyway, so Will tells him, or Starman tells him he's going to jail. The guy says, "I'm in Mexico. You got no jurisdiction." Now, I like this. Starman's like, "You're wrong. I am not the law. If I had to, I would chase you to the ends of the earth. You're coming with me." And he picks the guy up and flies him back to Arizona. And the guy's in a panic because, you know, this guy's picked him up, flying him back to go to jail when he thought he was safe. And we end this page with different news reports. We see the black cop saying that Starman came through for him. We see covers of newspapers saying, you know, West Coast finds a hero Starman. He captures a serial killer. News is interviewing people. There's this one gal saying, "Starman, I feel a lot safer knowing he's out there." And another guy talking about how he lifted the crane off of him with his two hands. No, he owes him his life. As we're reading this, and I'm thinking, again, this is on the West Coast. Most of your heroes is on the West, is on the East Coast. So that may be another reason why these people are shocked. At, you got a guy flying and bulletproof and super strong. Because most of that happens on the West or the East Coast. I don't know how much. And again, this 2016, as soon as it happened, no matter in the world, it would be on the internet. Everyone would know about it all over within 30 seconds. But 1988, we didn't have quite the news we do now. So people may not know as much about the heroes. A lot of maybe urban myths, possibly. I never really thought much about that. But I mean, if you're in New York or on the East Coast, you see Superman, you hear about Batman, you see all these heroes, the Teen Titans, all these heroes all the time on the news. So it's probably not too much of a thing. But if you're on the West Coast back in 88, you may not think so much about them. I don't know. That's, what do you guys think about that? Do you guys have any opinions on that? Have you guys thought about that? I'd be interested in hearing your thoughts on it. And then we get to the police department where I was talking about earlier how, again, the police are divided on it. Some are saying that, you know, they wish he could do what he does. And some aren't quite sure if he's real. Some are saying that he's real, but, you know, he's a showboater. You know, this one cop says, you know, yeah, we spent man hours trying to find this guy. And then he flies in Lone Ranger and wraps it up. Makes a flashy capture, gets his face plastered all the paper. From San Diego to the Gulf. And another guy's like, so what, Archie? If it hadn't been for Starman, that slime would have gotten away, would have killed another woman and gotten away. And the female cop from earlier that was asking him questions like, I have to agree with Charlie there. None of us could have done what Starman did. And Archie, the cop that was descending, is like, you know, I still say he's a hot dogger. What do you say, Captain? And the captain's like, well, I think the man handled a major threat to the public safely. And for that, we owe more thanks. On the other hand, he has no official standing at the department. There's no evidence he's breaking any laws. I hope it stays that way, because I'd surely hate to have to hunt him down. And again, it's been almost 30 years since I've read this book, so I don't remember if this is the hints of a subplot coming up, or if it's just a throwaway line about having to hunt him down. I don't remember him going bad, or the police thinking he's bad to have to hunt him down, but again, it's been almost 30 years, so I could be mistaken on that. I'll have to wait and see. And they're back at Will's house. Well, his mom's house. As his mom comes in complaining that, you know, he doesn't have a job. Are you looking? Get a little bit of his home life. Before that, Will's talking to his sister, Jane, who's in a very, very 80s outfit. Looks like almost a one-piece pantsuit thing with a white, almost superhero-looking belt on. And Will's saying, you know, he's commenting how, you know, he went after the guy one-handed, was able to stop him single-handedly. And maybe I do want to be the Lone Ranger. And Jane's like, not a bad role model after all. And she's like, but weren't you taking an awful chance, you know, getting so hot next to that crick killer? I mean, I don't like him in the gene pool either, but you don't want to kill him. And Will says, no, I don't think so. As I ran him down, I could see he didn't stand a chance against me. And realizing that, I was able to focus my energy, or my anger, and my heat to, well, sort of shoot the gun out of his hands. Just like the Ranger, huh? Oops. About that time, Mom walks in, and I guess she overheard him saying something about the Ranger, so Will says, you know, we're talking about the Rangers versus the White Sox. And again, that's where his mom's like, well, give me the sports page where you look for the help wanted listing. You're looking, aren't you? Again, being a very motherific thing to do, you know, worrying about her son not working, freeloading off of her, wanting to get a job. I've been there as a father, wanting my kids to get the job. My kids, I've got a 22 and a 23-year-old boys, and I've been where she's at. You know, you need to get a job. You need to do something in your life. You don't want to just around not do anything all day. Again, not knowing he's a superhero. Oh, maybe my kids are superheroes and I don't aware of it. Who knows? But see how this rally, I doubt it. And my son's rather play video games to save the world, but you never know. And then we go back to Melrose watching, getting more angry that, you know, Starman's getting all this recognition for, you know, what his guys are supposed to be doing. And we end the page with, who is this? Alan, Dr. Melrose's, one of his assistants. He's in a western New Mexico, not far from the Continental Divide, is what the caption tells us. And he goes in this house, and he's introducing himself to this guy, and we finally see him on the very last. The second to last panel, you can tell who he is, if you're familiar with him. And then we see that it's Bolt. If I'm not mistaken, I've seen him around a lot. I think he started in Blue Beetle, if I'm not mistaken. Shag would know the answer to that one, but... Alan's giving the guy a bag of money, a picture of Starman, and telling him that it must be handled discreetly. And he's telling him, here's all the data we have on Starman, plus an advance on the fee. And I like this. Alan's like, then you'll do it? Bolt's like, mister, for this much cash, there's not much I won't do. Bolt is at your service. The Starman hombre is good as caught. And Bolt, if you don't know, he's got like a dark blue, black costume on. He's got, I'm not quite sure what it's supposed to be. It looks like yellow triangles almost. His glasses. Looks like he has a mustache, small little mustache. And across his chest, he's got a giant skull with a lightning bolt behind it. And then where the letter column's at, we get some information on the creators of the book. Tom Lyle, Roger Stern, Bob Smith, Robert Greenberg, and so forth. But that's Starman for this month. That's my thoughts. Tell me what you guys think. In the meantime, hold on. I'm going to run a promo, and we'll be right back with Manhunter.
And now, these messages.
The Film and Water Podcast, a weekly show about movies old and new, hosted by obsessive movie nerd Rob Kelly and a rotating series of special guests. From sci-fi to horror, dramas to family films, comedies to adventure epics, we watch it all. The Film and Water Podcast is part of the Fire and Water family of podcasts, available weekly at fireandwaterpodcast.blogspot.com and on iTunes and Stitcher.
Yeah. Feels good. Feels good.
The time has come to enjoy myself.
Hello, greetings, and hi there. This is the Head Speaks Podcast. Hey there, true believers. Welcome to the Task Force X Headcast. G.I. Joe, the Real American Headcast, is the code name for Aaron's daring, highly trained headcast.
Hello there, my name is Aaron Moss, and this is the Starman Manhunter Adventure Hour.
Hello, my name is Alexis Mox. This is my show called Alexis Beat.
And all of these shows can be found on the Headcast Network. Look for it on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Also on Facebook by looking for the Headcast Networks. All of the great headcasts that you love on one convenient feed. Look for it. The Headcast Network. See you there.
Are you a geek looking for love? Do you long to find discussion on that special comic, TV episode, movie, or toy that's just right for you? Then why not try Supermates, the husband and wife geek cast? Chris and Cindy Franklin can match you with that certain something to satisfy your genre-related longings, no matter the subject. Superheroes.
But Robin's like, that was really nice of you, Batman. It's like, I had the room loaded with kryptonite. I can turn it on at any moment.
And here's the thing. You're talking about... Now, think about this. It's an apartment building owned by Batman. Do you not think that Batman doesn't have their place booked?
Sci-fi.
I don't know. You talk about being a sex symbol and stuff like that. I mean, I know a lot of girls thought, you know, William Shatner was it. But I had the biggest crush on George Takei. I did. I thought, you know...
Sorry about that. Horror.
And then when we see the Wolfman for the first time, he's in, I don't know,
a long sleeve shirt and a dark pair of pants.
With a belt.
With a belt.
That's what I was And his shirt's buttoned up all the way, too.
Yeah, yeah.
And his arms.
So after he changes into this ferocious beast who can't talk and doesn't seem to be able to think beyond just attacking things.
He has lots of dexterity.
He went through his closet and...
I like this outfit better.
Action figures.
I actually had all the figures and all the accessories up to a certain point. I really, literally did collect them all, you know.
Including She-Ra.
I was going to get to that, but... Meh.
Chris and Cindy have found their own happiness through discussions like this.
I can be friends with him. I can be down with this version of the Ultra Humanoid.
You can be friends with the dude who put his brain inside a mutated albino ape.
I married you!
Oh. If you're tired of searching for geek love, then sign up with Supermates for free at supermatescomic.blogspot.com or on iTunes.
And let's move on to Manhunter number 2. Manhunter number 2 was cover dated August of 1988, but to buy it on sale, you had to have $1 on April the 12th of 1988. The title of this book was entitled Dumas Kills, written by both the wonderful John Ostrander and delightful Kim Yell. Penciler was Doug Rice, inker was Sam Keith, letterer John Costanza, colorist Juliana Fritter, and the cover credits is artist Doug Rice. And the editor of this was Barbara Kiesel. And the synopsis. Mark Shaw accepts an assignment from his father to travel to Japan to serve a subpoena to Stephen Lee, an American living overseas. The trip turns out to be a trap set by Dumas, an international assassin who is actually Stephen Lee. Dumas uses his power of disguise to frame Mark for murder, then battles it out on the streets of Tokyo with Manhunter. Mark barely escapes and then is approached by the Yakuza. And I want to give a special thanks to Mike's Amazing World of Comics for that recap. So let's start the cover. Which are my thoughts. Again, this cover, it's not a bad cover. I don't know if it's my favorite. We see Manhunter, full costume, looking over a city, it looks like. There's like a jade dragon in the bottom corner. And standing above it all, with a skull's head that looks like a chess piece in his hand, is Dumas. Again, the Dumas mask is kind of odd, and I'll probably get that later on. It's a full face mask. It's split in half. One side's white, one side's green, with white, looks like probably hair coming out of the back of it, I believe. And off of one side is a long spike, like where an ear would be. Oh, it's kind of an odd mask. I don't quite understand it. The only real problem with it, in the background, again, Dumas is larger than everything, looking down like he's the city's his chess piece, his chess game, chess board, that's what it's called. And off in the distance of the city, you see a mountain. We see a red sun. It signifies we're in Japan. Overall, it's a nice cover. It's like I say, I'm not a big fan of Dumas's mask because I don't know, it just looks kind of odd. Maybe not drawn quite right, so. But it's a decent cover. And then we go to the story itself. As I talked about in my recap, Mark's talking with his father, and his father's giving him a job for him. He wants him to deliver a subpoena to a client. And I guess Mark's like, no offense, Dad, but that's not what I do. I'm a manhunter, not a process server. And his dad's like, well, the guy lives in Tokyo. You have to grab the guy and get him to the American embassy. And all your expenses be paid by our client. And at that point, Mark's like, you know what? A paid vacation? Not bad. So again, this isn't Mark's normal gig, but it's a paid vacation to Japan. All expenses paid. He's going to take him up on it. And so he's like, okay, go on because it's you, Dad. And his dad sees right through him. He's like, yeah. And I thought it was just for the free ticket to Tokyo.
So, again, it shows his dad knows him. I like a little bit of dialogue there. And his dad starts to go on about how he likes Japan. He was stationed there after the war. And, again, great dialogue writing by Oster and Yale. I'm not sure which one did which, but it's great writing here. Like any parent talking to their kids, you know, they hear something that makes them think about a memory, and so they start to go down memory lane. And the kid's like, yeah, I've heard that before, Dad. All right, I got to go. Bye. And that's basically what Mark does here. He's like, I got to go pack. Bye. Before Dad gets started on his story. And as Mark leaves, he's accosted by his brother, who is an attorney or something. And he's telling him that he has an anonymous client that wants to buy his Manhunter mask. And Mark's like, well, no, I'm not selling my mask, but it has all my secrets. Someone that could have, the wrong person gets it. My job as Manhunter is done, because they could cross, reverse engineer it. They could figure out how do I do my stuff, and they could defeat me. So, no. So his brother Jamie goes back, all upset, you know, paranoid jerk. And so he calls Mr. DeVry and tells him that, you know, his brother doesn't wish to decline with his mask. So he's kind of upset that Mark doesn't want to sell the Manhunter mask, and, you know, so he thinks he's a jerk and paranoid. But in actuality, as we find out, Mark's correct to be paranoid, and he's not so much an idiot, he's just trying to protect himself, because we find out that he's actually talking to the bad guy. The next panel here, we find out that this Mr. DeVry has set up a meeting with Dumas, which we'll find out he wants Dumas to get the mask. And then we find out that he's actually the one that hired Mark's dad to get Mark to go to Japan. So at this point, we know this entire trip to Japan to collect this guy is all a setup. So while Mark might be paranoid, he's absolutely correct to try to keep his secrets. And I forget, it's been a while since I've read these books, but Jamie's coming across, his brother, is coming across as a class grade A jerk. So we'll see how that plays out in the future, I'm sure. But then as DeVry and his assistant go to meet Dumas, we get a little history on Dumas at this point, a little backstory. We find out that Dumas is an assassin extraordinary wide, that he's actually born Stephen Lee in the American South, but no one knows when. All records of his birth have vanished. And his name Dumas, was taken from the author of The Man in the Iron Mask. And we find out that, you know, it tells us here that his face is completely malleable, muscle and bone structure. So by force, he can physically adopt the features of any person he can visualize. And we also find out that, I mentioned last issue, that it looks like his face was kind of melting. It tells us here that the tragedy is he has no face of his own at this point. Unless he concentrates, he'll actually lose his face and his features will slide like putty. Kind of like what I mentioned last episode. So that artwork where it showed looked like his face was melting was actually pretty accurate, so in hindsight, that's actually a good panel because it shows what we're going to find out this issue on him. So, and we also find out that once an assignment is undertaken, he cannot be stopped or recalled until he finishes it. And we also find out that Dumas likes kabuki masks. It's one of his passions. And that he lives behind a series of masks when he's not working. And then we see Dumas. He's got a gold mask on with like pinchers or something on the side of it, like an ant or something. And DeVry tells him that the job is on. He wants him to find the mask. He pays him the money. Usual business when you're hiring someone to steal something for you, I guess. And DeVry's assistant, the guy who was talking to him earlier, that was the sounding board that DeVry was giving him Dumas' backstory for us. As they go along, he says, do you mind a personal question, Dumas-san? Just what is the connection between you and Ms. Vancroft? Are you and she? Ms. Vancroft is the lady from last issue at the end that had all the masks that wants the Manhunter masks to complete her collection. And the next panel after we ask that question, we see Dumas popping his sword. And the third panel's like, we hear DeVries saying, Dumas was in a good mood. He didn't kill you for asking that incredibly stupid question. So again, we can tell, as DeVries said, from here we can tell that he's very private. He doesn't want people to know his history. Doesn't want anything about him. And he usually kills for asking stupid questions. So, very good to know. And then we go to the next page where we see Mark Shaw in Japan. Again, this page, page 6, is decent artwork. I mean, nothing really exceptional going on here. We get again, he talks about how, aside from the Manhunter name, the only thing he kept from his days with the cult was the brain? The power baton, which he lets us know he altered. He lets us know that the old baton serves as the self-regenerating power source for the modular attachments for, like, the magnetic pulse, which we saw last issue. He tells us that completely exhausted, the power source takes about 3 hours to regenerate, and he's ready to go. The next page, it's a nice page. We see the Manhunter on top of a building. I mean, the buildings is generic, ordinary buildings, but then we have Mark Shaw standing over, looking over the city. I say Mark Shaw. I mean, Manhunter. Again, decent page. And he leaps into action. And I think I may have mentioned this last episode. But whenever he uses a baton, the way the energy crackles out of it and pulses out, it reminds me of Cardiac from the 90s Spider-Man comics. Again, this came first, so that should remind me of this. But I haven't seen Cardiac in a while. So, anyways. Then next couple pages we get Manhunter fighting against Dumas or Dumas. Mark figures out that he's been ambushed. And again, next couple pages, some fights. He gets knocked into off the side of a building. He uses his power baton to knock himself through a window to save him. He jumps down an elevator shaft and uses the baton to use the magnetic pulse to swing from side to side until the elevator starts coming down after him and almost clobbers him. And like this is on page 9. Right above that we see Mark Shaw falling down an elevator shaft using the baton to kind of swing from side to side to lower himself gently. As the elevator's catching up with him, the bottom of the page, we see this Japanese guy. Looks a little bit to me like an Asian Clark Kent, but what do I know? And the guy's thinking, really, these elevators are getting most inefficient. And as the elevator stops, we see that the elevator that was catching up with Mark Shaw actually contained Dumas. And so the door opens, Dumas standing there. He's like, stopped? You have cost me my prey. And then we cut outside and see Mark Shaw running. We hear cops coming in the distance. The police come up on the next page and they find Mark Shaw as the Manhunter. So they're trying to stop him to question him. And as he raises his hand, Dumas shoots one of his little blades, which looks like a spade, I believe it is, from a suit of cards. And to show how good Dumas is, he shoots this little spade blade. So it flies between a little split between Mark's fingers on his hand. So it looks like it came from Mark, Manhunter, and hits one of the cops. And he turns around and sees that one of the cops is actually Dumas in disguise. But since no one saw the cop fire the blade, they think Manhunter did it. So again, he takes off, running from the cops. Jumps over a little bridge onto incoming traffic, onto a car, and we see a shadow figure of Dumas coming in after him. And again, this panel at bottom of page 12, we see Mark was on top of a car, and it looks almost like
like maybe Dumas is flying after him, but I'm not quite sure. Again, it's not a bad panel, but it's a little unclear as to how Dumas is catching up to him. Because previously, in the previous panel, Mark's on one car. There's a car or two between him, and Dumas is landing on top of a truck, like a newspaper truck, it looks like. And next thing we see, Dumas is in the air. Like I said, it looks like he's flying. I don't know if flight is one of his powers or how he's catching up so quick. But as Dumas catches up to him, Mark turns around and hits him with his baton, which he's turned like into nunchucks. And as he says here, he needs something a little more aggressive. He converts the baton to power nunchuck mode. And yeah, since his mask lets him know when Dumas is getting close to him, so he the last thing he flips around and knocks Dumas into the truck that he jumped on earlier. And again, Dumas throws some more of his little throwing stars or whatever you want to call them. And I like this little panel here, the scene at the bottom of page 13. He throws these little stars or fires and whatever at, you're thinking, Mark. But it bounces off the ground, hits the car tire, causes the car to spin out because he blows the back tire out, which causes Mark to fly off, land into traffic. And again, he tells us that, you know, his padded suit saved him. As he jumps away, he says it's kind of funny. One of the faces of the crowd looked a bit like his. And we cut to the crowd scene, and we see that Mark Shaw is in the crowd as he pulls a gun out and starts firing at cops, killing them. As they fire at him, there is a comment here. They're like, you know, who is that? I'm talking about Manhunter and Dumas fighting. They're like, I think you're filming a live-action version of an old animation series. Yes, yes. And they throw out a couple of names. There's Eighth Man, Dynamo Joe, Hikara Yonan, or Kamen Rider. I wasn't sure about these. Dynamo Joe sounds familiar, so I had to look these up and see if these are actual real characters or not. Eighth Man is an actual Japanese comic from the 60s. Kamen Man, that's K-A-M-E-N, come on, Man is a Japanese TV show. Dynamo Joe was apparently a comic book series published by First Comics in 86 through 88. So that was just finished by the time this came out. It was created and plotted and drawn by Doug Rice. And it was first scripted by, well, someone that you guys may be familiar with, a fabulous writer named John Ostrander. I apparently like him since I'm covering two different comics he's written in the 80s. This and Suicide Squad over on my Task Force X podcast. Plug, plug. But getting back to this, Dynamo Joe, it was then scripted by Phil Foglio after that. And then there was another mention of Hikaron, who the best thing I could find is Campus Special Investigator Hikaron, which is a Japanese original video animation produced by AIC, which was released in 1987. I'm not sure if that's the same Hikaron or if it's something different. Again, that was awful close to when this was released, so I'm sure it probably was related. But that's neither here nor there, I guess. But those are the references I found for those names that was mentioned. I saw those, and back 30 years ago when I first read this, I didn't really pay much attention to it. Because I didn't really have a way to look these up like I do now. Now, thanks to the internet, I saw these names. I'm like, you know, I wonder if these are actual comics or shows or something. And sure enough, they are actually all real properties of some sort, so. But then, so Dumas has taken Mark Shaw's face, and he steals a cop's gun and starts gunning down cops. He lets one of them grab his passport, which apparently he stole Mark's passport. Maybe it's a copy, I'm not sure. And he gets away and changes his face again, dons his mask. And then he confronts, Dumas confronts Mark Shaw. And so, you know, Mark's, he's checking his power baton. The power baton's exhausted. So as he says, he realizes his opponent has all the advantages. He knows everything's going on. Mark doesn't know anything. I like this. He's like, and he was ready to kill. And me, I just wanted to survive.
And as Dumas shows up, Mark's like, "Who are you?" "Dumas, you've heard of me?" And Manhunter's like, "Yes, you're a master assassin. What do you want with me?" And like this little bit of dialogue, Dumas is like, "I was contracted to take your mask and your life." Mark's like, "You can have the mask. I was contracted for both. My contracts are sacred to me." Then I'll keep both. And again, a little more fight, run here as they fight again. And Mark uses the baton and smacks Dumas in the face. And Dumas is like, "You go too far. You touched the mask." And he goes bonkers. So Mark's able to takes off and escapes from Dumas. Gets away from Dumas and he gets back. And he realizes that the direction that Dumas was leading him as they're fighting is back towards Mark's apartment or hotel. And using the mic, unidirectional mic and the mask, he hears that the police were looking for him. And again, he can't speak the language, but he assumes that they're looking for him since he hears his name being mentioned quite a bit. And this is where Dumas, in true supervillainy style, gives a little, "You are the hunted. I took your face and in your place killed 6 policemen. Even if you could elude me, the police would hunt you for me. You cannot escape Japan. You are beaten, Manhunter." Because having killed the police as Mark Shaw, he can't get on the airplane and escape now and leave Japan because, well, he's a wanted man by the authorities. And he can't very well go into the airport dressed as Manhunter. So he realizes he's in trouble. And so that was actually a pretty brilliant, even though, again, I'm not a big fan of Dumas's costume. It may be just me, but, or maybe it's the way it's being drawn here, but the mask is very odd looking. If not drawn properly, it looks off. I don't know. I just not a big fan of Dumas's costume. I like his abilities. He's a great villain, but it just that mask is just too weird and too odd for me. If not done right, it comes across badly. So, but as Mark's fighting him, he pops a little spear or point on the end of his baton, throws it at Dumas, and basically sacrificing his power baton to get away from Dumas. And he jumps over the side of the building. I like this. There's this, paper or cloth, or I'm assuming it's a cloth covering on the building like you see in movies a lot of times when they're working on a building. He makes a comment that he said he saw Burt Lancaster do this in a movie once. And so he grabs the side of the paper and or the cloth or whatever it is, and as he slides down, it rips, slowing him his descent down. I think I saw something like that in Rush Hour 2, if I'm not mistaken. But, and he crashes into some boards. And he's taunting Dumas, like, "You know, come get me, I'm down here." Basically. And as Dumas jumps down, Mark, I'm not quite sure what's happening here. We see a big power cable going somewhere. Mark flips the power on the switch there, and it turns the entire girder that Dumas is landing on for that building, electrifies the whole thing and shocks him. And as Dumas lands and comes to, he sees that Mark Shaw's gone already, or Manhunter's gone. And so he says, "You know, you have hurt me, Manhunter, in a manner I can least afford. You have escaped me, if only for the moment. I swear that by whatever means, I will be the face of your death." And then we cut to Mark Shaw as himself, trying to figure out what to do. As he says here, he has no plans. He just wants to gather his wits, find a place to crash. And he's confronted by a bunch of Japanese guys, which we find out that they're not the police. As they say, they're something far stronger. They're the Yakuza. "You're coming with us." And Mark's like, "Well, since you put it that way, let's go." Next, the Chelma of Japan. And that's where the issue ends. Again, overall, I enjoyed the issue. I'm not a fan of Dumas' costume, but I like the character. Dumas is very smart. I like the way he made life a living heck for Mark Shaw and Manhunter. I'm not quite sure
And again, the way they are, he's a little far away, so I'm not sure if he was... In fact, looking at this one panel on page 21, he may have actually been hooking up that wire I was mentioning earlier to the girder. Maybe that's why it's electrified. I missed that to begin with, but... Because, again, we're kind of like Dumas's from point of view, so we can't really see what Mark's doing. But looking at it again, I think he hooked the wire up to the building, and that's why it's electrified. So some of the artwork, like I say, that page was kind of wonky, kind of hard to tell. Overall, I enjoy most of the art in this. It's just Dumas I'm not happy with, and just a few panels here and there's not great. But overall, I enjoyed the art. John Ostringer and Kim Yale, they're fantastic at the writing and the scripting. It's a John Ostringer book, so it's fantastic. The letter column this month, again, we have John Ostringer basically talking a little bit about masks. He writes a little, he says, when they give the proposal for Manhunter, there was a whole section about masks, and he threw that in here. And then midway through John's little story here, there's a little thing, says interruption, Kim poking over John's shoulder, I thought we were co-writers on this. John's like, yeah, we are, honey. And Kim's like, how come you're hogging the text page? John's like, well, Kim's, you already wrote one. John says, well, yeah, Kim's like, so when's my turn? John's like, next time, Kim. Or next time, Kim, put down that gun. SFX, bang, change of authors. And then Kim Yale goes on and continues writing the rest of this column here, telling about how they came up with the idea for Manhunter and some of their, some of the background behind it. And like at the very end, where they usually sign it, she wrote, Kim Yale, with John Ostringer before I shot him. And at the very end of this, we get a nice little page, or a little picture, half page, picture of Mark Shaw and the Manhunter standing next to each other. Manhunter's got his foot up on the medallion for the Manhunters, I believe it is, the Colt. Not a bad artwork page here. Not the best. It's by Doug Rice, it looks like. Not super fantastic, but decent. But again, that is Manhunter number 2. I hope you guys enjoyed that. Let me know your thoughts. But before I say more, let's go ahead and move on to the letter column, which I am calling, until I hear something better, Cosmic Treks. First of all, let's give a little credit where credit is due. Before I give credit, let me go ahead and give a little disclaimer. Again, as a lot of my podcasts, I steal ideas from better podcasters than myself. Again, taking that same line of stealing things, I am going to steal or borrow an idea from one of Shag and Rob's podcasts, the Who's Who podcast. In each episode, they give out an award called the Steam Award, which, since it's Fire, Storm, and Aquaman, fire and water make steam, they call it the Steam Award. That's on their Firestorm and Aquaman podcast. On their Who, they have the Yellow Dot Award. And then, I forget the name of it, but on Shag's new JLI podcast, he's got an award. And basically, these are honorary mentions for people. You get an award, but like they said, the award is very intangible. I'm not sending you nothing because I'm too broke and poor, but in honors of honors, you will have an award. I think we're going to go ahead and call this award for our show the Cosmic Baton. Cosmic for Starman and Baton because of Mark Hunter. So the Cosmic Baton, it's as tangible as outer space is. I'll work on that, but again, I'm stealing this off the fly. Sorry, Shag and Rob, I'm stealing some more of your ideas. Anyway, so the Cosmic Baton Award this month goes to Jeff Nettleton. As I read in his letter last month, he gave us a suggestion of Cosmic Treks, which we're going to use for this the letter column or the mailbag page. So thanks, Jeff Nettleton. And your Cosmic Treks Award is, I'm mentally sending to you right now, and you should have it as soon as you listen to this episode. But enough about that. Let's go ahead and move on to Cosmic Treks. See, all that big buildup and all that mentioning of the Cosmic Treks and all that, and I don't really have a whole lot to go over at this point. I received no emails this month, so no emails to read. I will go over to the Facebook, and people that have either liked or, yeah, they liked or subscribed to us or whatever since last month, we have. And again, some of these may be repeats occasionally. If so, I'm sorry. Let me go ahead and start here. There's Micah Sigmund, Kane Dorr. In fact, Kane Dorr commented on my last post when I posted about the first episode. Kane Dorr, I hope I'm not mispronouncing your name, asked, when does the Manhunter portion start? And I told him it starts about half an hour into it. And I told him I'm going to start trying to put in the show notes when each segment starts. Because some people may not care about Starman, they just want to hear about Manhunter, and vice versa. So in the show notes, thanks to Kane Dorr, I'm going to start putting the show times, hopefully, in there. Moving on from Kane Dorr, Clinton Robinson, Coffee and Comics Blog, Sonny Morrison, Brian W. Fraser, Leon Bechigag, all liked either our page or our post or our cover comments on here. While I'm talking about Facebook, a friend of the network and fellow lover of 1980s DC Comics, a Facebook group called DC in the 80s, they're holding a submission contest, and there's a mystery prize to be won. I don't know what the prize is going to be. The contest, again, it's on our Facebook. We have a link to it. It's a picture of the old Justice League gang, Wonder Woman, Superman, Green Arrow, Batman, Robin. And in the middle, there's a big blurry spot that you can fill in and finish the picture, basically. To find this, you need to get a link on our website, and I'll put a link in the show notes. You can also go to dcinthe80s.blogspot.ca, and it should be on there. The direct link, again, is dcinthe80s.blogspot.ca/2016/03/r-first-contest.html. So go ahead and check out the contest. If you're an artist type, go ahead and try drawing the picture and send it in, see what happens. I am one of the judges for this. Our buddy over there at DC in the 80s, he's a big fan of the show. He likes the 80s much like we do. So he asked me to be a judge. So I'm going to help judge the winners on this. So give it your best shot. Let's go ahead and move on over to the Twitters. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but that's what I'm going to call it, the Twitters. And on the Twitters, we have comments and likes and retweets from Richard Field, Divisive Issues, DC in the 80s, Amelia, Coffee and Comics Blog, Court Industries. They all either liked or retweeted things I posted on there. Coffee and Comics Blog retweeted our post last month about me uploading the first episode of the Starman Manhunter Adventure Hour. And they retweeted and said on their tweet, "People, be sure to check this show out. If you're an old fan or a new curious party, I promise good coverage." And I thanked them for the retweet and told them that I hope I can live up to their expectations. And they replied back, "Have so far. I don't see any reason it'll stop being just as good." So again, thank you very much, Coffee and Comics Blog. I appreciate the kind words. Also, just to finish up with the Twitters. Again, these are all on the Headcast Network. Not necessarily where the following is for, if it's whether this or one of my other mini podcasts. But and I may have mentioned some of these last time, but I'm going to mention them again just to be on the safe side. There's no one's name here. Comics Couplets, Kyle Benning, who you can usually hear over on the G.I. Joe Real American Headcast talking about G.I. Joe comics with me. They're all following us and liking our comments on here stuff. So, anyways, that's about it for the Twitters. Again, we don't have a whole lot right now. We have 9 followers, which I guess isn't too bad for me. I'll be happy with that. And I guess that's about it. Like I said, I don't do much on the Google+, so there's nothing for that to report at this time. So I guess that'll do it for this episode. Like I said, this is the Starman Adventure. Try that again. Like I said, this is the Starman Manhunter Adventure Hour. This episode is running a little long. It's running an hour 20 minutes or so. Again, this will probably be the average length, I'm guessing. But again, the Starman Manhunter Adventure Hour sounds a whole lot better than the Starman Adventure Hour 20-ish, whatever. So go ahead and check us out. Check out our other great podcasts. You can check us all out on the Headcast Network on iTunes. And again, we're on the Twitters the same way, on Facebook. Check out our other podcasts. Until next time, my fellow star hunters, keep watching the skies. I know I've stolen that tagline from somewhere else. Maybe Art Bell, I'm not sure. But until I come up with a better tagline, star hunters, keep watching the stars. All right, I'm done. Later, guys. Thank you for listening to another great episode of the Starman Manhunter Adventure Hour. Please join us next month for another great, fantastic episode as we cover another issue of the Will Payton Starman series and the Mark Shaw Manhunter series. Keep in mind that these podcasts are not affiliated or endorsed by DC Comics. I'm just a fanboy who loves these comics and wants to spread these love with everyone else out there and just talk about them. Again, you can email us at smah@headspeaks.com. Or you can go to our blog, which is at starman-manhunter.headspeaks.com. You can also go to the Facebook page at facebook.com/starman-manhunter-adventure-hour. No spaces, all one word. But once again, thank you very much for joining us. Until next episode, this is Aaron Moss saying, see you in the funny pages.
Mr. Pretzel, Mr. Lipstick, Mr. Mitzelfuzzle?
Mr. Mitzi's Pitlick?
Yeah, him.
He's also part of the DC Who's Who.
Who's Who, the definitive podcast of the DC Universe.
Available monthly at Aquaman Shrine, Firestorm Fan, and on iTunes and Stitcher as part of the Fire and Water podcast.
Hi, friends. It's your old pal, Adam Worth. You may remember me from podcasts like Comic Book Fight Club, The Quantum Cast, and the thousands of other shows I somehow get roped into making guest appearances on. The podcasting world has been very good to me, and I feel it's about time that I give back. So coming this spring, I'll be helping to make the world a better place with my new show, The Bad Advice Show. Join me and a few choice panelists as we answer your questions on life, love, relationships, history, life hacks, and politics. Really, whatever topics you feel you would like to get my valued opinion on. So hop on the advice train as we make the world a better place coming this spring to an internet streaming device near you. To have your questions answered on The Bad Advice Show, send us an email at thebadadviceshow@yahoo.com. That's thebadadviceshow@yahoo.com. And remember, kids, if you want to remain anonymous, don't tell me your name.